Time for This Week in Chicago History. Good morning, Anna DeVlantis.
Good morning, Bob.
This was quite a historic week in Chicago. This week in 62, wasn't it?
1962. Take us back to that moment, Bob. A major time of celebrations all across the city. Mayor Richard J. Daley famously had played a big role in helping JFK clinch the presidency. And so now President John F. Kennedy was returning the favor, coming to Chicago, and it was like a national holiday had begun. There were multi-days of like celebrations, Bob. This was huge. They had American flags draping the streets, bands and the horses marched down State Street, and people dressed up and came downtown to try to catch a glimpse of the president. He rode in an open convertible, waving at the crowds. And like I said, just this huge celebrations were planned over a course of many days or a couple of days. And the big order of business, though, was a stop at Erie Crown Theater for the president to meet with the Cook County Democratic Committee and important political figures who had helped him in the race for president. They held a big dinner for JFK, and he addressed his staunch supporters here in Chicago. We pulled a clip from WGN-TV.
So I come to Illinois and ask your help in electing Sid Yates to the Senate, sending these congressmen back and committing Illinois and the country to moving forward in the 1963s and 4s.
It was the circumstances around JFK leaving Chicago that really made history, right?
Yeah, it's so true, Bob. He cut that visit short before he was scheduled. His press secretary said he had a cold. There was a much more serious reason for his departure, we came to find out. A U.S. intelligence spy plane had spotted the Soviets building missile bases in Cuba, and the president was informed that we might be on the brink of nuclear war. He needed to come to the White House now. Of course, the nation stood by nervously for several weeks, bracing for that and before the de-escalation agreement was released. But it was a pretty cool couple of days for Chicagoans who were able to fet the president while they could.
And a pretty exciting time around here, October of 2016. We still had baseball on the north side.
Yeah, it was so cool. I mean, anybody who was there was part of this, like, get to go to these games. You know, remember, October 15th, 2016, the Cubs were opening the National League Championship Series here at home. Magical time to be a Cubs fan. Exciting and tense. Win the pennant and they'd be on their way to the first World Series in over 100 years. No big deal. This was game one. And what a thrilling game it was. We pulled a clip here, Bob, because it was, if you put us in where the game was at that time, the Cubs had taken an early lead against the Dodgers. Dodgers tied it up a few innings later. Still tied in the eighth, the Dodgers faced Miguel Montero on the mound, who'd been injured, not playing well, not playing at the top of his game. And here's what happened.
I didn't have a good year. And at this point, honestly, I'm a really bad pinch hitter. On the other hand, Joe Blanton had a really good success against me. I never felt he was that nasty, but he always got me out. He had my numbers for sure, so it was a good move by the manager, but I hated the fact that they walked the guy. So I'm like, I'm going to prove all of you guys are wrong. You don't load the bases to face Miggy, though.
Strike two.
So I'm thinking, I got two strikes. Just choke up a little bit and make something happen.
Here comes the 0-2.
When I hit it, I was like, it's way, way gone. I'm like, take that.
High drive into right, back at the wall, and he's gone! Grand slam, Montero! Game one hero!
Yeah, Joe Buck. And Montero was pretty banged up, wasn't he?
Yeah. It just is interesting to hear him tell the story, Bob. It's so true. He had suffered two herniated discs. He was in a ton of pain. He could barely walk, but he stepped into that batter's box, and he said later, I could feel no pain at that moment in time. Just really, really one of the many magical moments from that season.
And we have a little football history from this week in 1985, and you think of that as being the best of times for Mike Ditka, but it wasn't all great. Was it?
This is something that I didn't remember. I don't know if you did, Bob, but think about, put us in that place again. Bears were off and running, storybook season unfolding, just beat the defending Super Bowl champions, the 49ers, 26-10. And the headlines the next morning were nothing but negative, because Coach Mike Ditka was after flying in from O'Hare to O'Hare from the game late at night, he got a DUI driving home, and it wasn't a good look. A state trooper on the tri-state spotted his Mercedes speeding, weaving in and out of lanes, and pulled him over. It was Ditka, and he got no preferential treatment. So he took Ditka to the police station. He booked him, made him surrender his driver's license. Ditka took a cab home, but the next morning is what was so crazy. When you go back and you look at what happened, people were furious in the city, Bob, at the state trooper.
Yeah, how dare you
pull over
how
the coach? Do you remember this?
How dare you do that to Mike Ditka?
Right?
Yeah.
It's like, what are you thinking? They were calling into the sports, you know, hotlines on the sports radio, and they also were calling by the hundreds to chew them out to the state troopers. Like, they were calling the actual, you know, state trooper phone lines. And I pulled the archive from the Chicago Tribune. They interviewed one of the state troopers on the phone, on phone duty the next day, and he said, they're calling us every name in the book. They hate us. And the troopers released a statement saying, had the officer not done his job, Ditka could have been dead. Well, that accomplished nothing. People were still crazy. Ditka himself had to come out and say, don't blame the police. Then Secretary of State Jim Edgar stepped in to give a pro-police press conference and tried to quiet people down. But just think about that, Bob. That was how popular Mike Ditka was before the championship.
Yeah, I remember the DUI incident, but I didn't remember all of the mishigas that followed
right.
that. Wow.
Good word.
Michael Jackson, Chicago. I don't think I ever heard that, but
I haven't either.
Anna has a notation on this song, This Week in Chicago History, 1999.
For sure, we all know Frank Sinatra's song, Chicago, but that one I hadn't heard either, Bob. It is the much lesser known Michael Jackson song, Chicago, recorded This Week, 1999. One good reason it's so unknown is Michael Jackson never released it. It's supposed to be released on his album Invincible, but he decided against it. The song would go largely unheard for 15 years, so it was released after his death on the album Escape. And the song's a ballad about a girl in Chicago living a double life. He falls in love with her head over heels, and then only to discover she has a husband and family also living in Chicago. So there you go, the not-so-well-known Chicago song by Michael Jackson.
Yeah, for sure. You know, there's a lot of great history in our town relating to the advertising world, and the Leo Burnett Agency played a big part in all that, didn't it?
Love all this stuff. You know, the Leo Burnett Agency, legendary, just represented so many of the iconic brands worldwide, but it was tasked at this time, 1965, with redoing the image of another prominent Chicago company, United Airlines. So put yourself in 1965. More people were starting to fly. It wasn't just business travelers. This was now the airlines were opening up, and a lot of them were trying to appeal to new customers. So most airlines at the time were portraying air travel as being very glamorous. And wow, it's like this wonderful party with these beautiful flight attendants in the sky and, you know, cocktails and fun and stuff. Well, United went in a very different direction, portraying air travel on United as just being very approachable, relaxed, and just a comfortable experience, kind of like going to a small Midwestern town where you could fly the friendly skies. And that's where they came up with the slogan. So here's an early ad we pulled, Bob, for United shortly after that campaign was launched.
Come fly with me. Let's fly today. If I advise those friendly skies. Holiday.
It's really happening. You're going on vacation. You chose United because we fly to all the great places, because you've heard how friendly our skies can be, and because we saved you real money on our family plan. Your travel agent saved you money too, and he handled all the details. And now, here you are, spending all your vacation on vacation, because United said, come fly with me.
Fly the friendly sky.
Yeah. I've got a great idea for a video that certainly would go viral. Take that audio and put it to the video of news clips featuring unruly passengers for the past couple of years. That'd be pretty good, right?
I love that idea, Bob.
Yeah, you couldn't
do... It makes you so calm and relaxed.
You
couldn't
do
the friendly skies.
The friendly skies wouldn't...
Not really anymore, United.
No, it wouldn't work today, that's for sure. Man. But that talk about an effective campaign, because people still think about the friendly skies and connected to United. And what did you say? That was 1965?
1965, wow. When they came up with it. And you're right. Lasted, until 1996. And they retired it, brought it back after that horrible incident, speaking of incidents on aircrafts, when they dragged that Dr. Dow down the passenger aisle. They tried to get him from his seat, and he was bloody, and he was missing a tooth because the airline police were trying to get him out. And horrible. Just a nightmarish PR situation. Brought it back after that, Bob. Mm-hmm. So, still the friendly skies.
And finally, this is the anniversary of the Wienermobile.
First Wienermobile was made here, Bob. Chicago invention. Carl Meyer, Oscar Meyer's nephew, built it on his own car. He had his own vehicle. He said, "Hey, uncle, this is a great way to market your company." And so he drove around town. It was only in Chicago that very first time. Ended up retiring it for the war effort. They wanted to donate the medal for the war effort. Came back again years later, and it's been in existence ever since. I guess they changed it to the Frankomobile or the Frankmobile.
Yeah, that was a prank, a scam. I mean, they knew they were going to make it the Wienermobile again, but they thought they'd get some publicity if they came out with that story, and everybody went for it.
They're great at publicity,
yeah,
that's for sure.
They are.
Still get to see the Wienermobile, though, and then we love that, so very cool.
And let's see, it's the 85th anniversary of the Wienermobile, so when that guy was driving it around in 1936, he could park it. There were still a lot of free spaces back then. Talk to you next Wednesday. Thank you.
Bye, Bob.
Anna.